Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Nurse Anesthesia Podcast. I'm your host, Jeremy Heiner, and thank you for joining us for another episode. We are CRNAs, and we love talking about anesthesia and critical care. We work in the operating room. We're also full-time nurse anesthesia educators who are passionate about all things anesthesia and critical care. My guest today is the one and only Roxanne McMurray, who is a CRNA and inventor of the McMurray Enhanced Airway. I have been wanting to talk about this for so long. I'm super excited that she has joined me on the show today. Now, the McMurray Enhanced Airway is a device that is positioned in the distal pharyngeal airway. Roxanne is a retired associate program director of a nurse anesthesia program and founder of McMurray Medical. Her device, the McMurray Airway, or McMurray Enhanced Airway, you can go either way, is used by anesthesia providers, critical care providers, and EMS providers. She brings decades of clinical expertise, academic leadership, and hands-on innovation to our conversation today. Roxanne's best known for transforming everyday basic airway management challenges into practical, provider-designed solutions that elevate patient safety and efficiency. All right, this is a great conversation. Let's get right to it. Take some deep breaths to pre-oxygenate because it's go time. Hello, Roxanne. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Jeremy. It's great to be here with you today.
All right. So now, before we talk about your airway device, the innovative airway device that you created, can you tell our audience a little bit about yourself? What's your clinical background?
Yes. So I'm a CRNA with over 30 years of experience. I started my career in the 1990s, not to be confused with the 1900s. And I'm a former clinical assistant professor and assistant program director at the University of Minnesota, teaching first-year students the fundamentals of anesthesia. So I had them during that first year. My career has been spent in the trenches of anesthesia, working initially in the high acuity hospitals. And then in the late 1990s, I had a passion to work at some of the first ambulatory surgery centers in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. And then the last 10 years, I have spent my work in the fast-paced GI centers.
They are fast-paced. They do a lot of cases in a day. So tell us, was there a moment in your career that, you were doing airway management, and was there any part of airway management that you were really passionate about?
Yeah, mainly the spontaneously breathing airway management under deep sedation. Now, when I started, we had sodium pentothal, mexihexital, so we weren't doing a lot of deep max. It was closer to probably 2010 that we really started doing a beautiful deep max. But it was really born out of the clinical frustration that I came to the realization that, hey, we need a new device. And I didn't know it at the time, but the seed was planted. When I was on a mission trip to Peru, I had to manage airway and anesthesia for this young Peruvian boy who was 8 years old, but he was like the size of a five-year-old, who presented with a cleft palate, and his lips were nearly fused. So he could only get like a little straw in the corner of his lips. And I had to MacGyver a multi-purpose tool to keep him safe. And I had to keep his airway open. Since we couldn't oral or nasal intubate or even do a wake intubation on this little boy, I had to keep him comfortable. And we only had 100% FiO2. We didn't have any air. So you could think about, what a conundrum, right? So I had to keep my hands out of the surgeon's way. So I had to MacGyver this little Peruvian tool, and with the limited tools that we had at hand, and I used some duct tape and I used a nasal airway. Mm-hmm. And I had to be able to positive pressure ventilate him too if I needed to. So this tool is really what was the inspiration, and it made me look at, okay, what are we doing with our airway management with our deep sedation cases in the early 2000s, especially with the propofol. And that's when it was booming because propofol initially was just for general anesthesia because it did not have that EDTA, that micro growth inhibitor in the propofol. But as soon as they got that in the early 2000s, then we could use it for deep max sedation.
Okay. Yeah. And obviously propofol is our go-to. And I always tell the students when we're talking about monitored anesthesia care or MAC anesthesia, there's, you know, the regular MAC and then there's the big MAC, which is the deep sedation, which you've been talking about. And sometimes we get in those situations where patients need more sedation when we're doing monitored anesthesia care. And there's a fine line where they go from spontaneously breathing to obstructing their breathing. And I know, you know, you talked about working in fast paced surgery centers and we're doing upper endoscopies with patients who have higher BMIs a lot of times, trying to figure out what's going on with their upper GI symptoms. And they can obstruct very quickly.
Yes, yes. And you know, and it's progressive. The airway obstruction is progressive. And I didn't know this until I started studying it. And, you know, thank God for ChatGPT because they can really pull all this information in. But it starts with, you know, the upper airway and the collapse of the uvula. And then in the lateral pharyngeal walls, that's initially the collapse. And then that can pull in the negative inspiration pressure when that collapses. So when you think about when that's closed and they're trying to breathe, well, that is when a patient can have an aspiration, right? And have some vomit come up in the back of their throat. And then it progresses deeper down as the patient gets sleepier to the tongue, the base of the tongue falling in the back of the pharynx. When the patient gets really, really deep, it's the hypopharynx, which is right by the epiglottis that obstructs. So in deep sedation, it's the epiglottis. And that's why our OPAs are not working. And that's why we have to do a jaw thrust 80% of the time, even when we do use an OPA.
Okay. Yeah. To recap, the obstruction is almost sequential. And sometimes it can happen really quickly in terms of all three areas collapsing. At first, it starts in the upper airway with that relaxation of the musculature that innervates the uvula and the soft palate starts there. Then it progresses to the tongue. And ultimately, it progresses to the hypopharynx and the area with the epiglottis, where all of those can potentially cause obstruction. And you're right. The risk of aspiration is always present in those circumstances. Okay. So now you've mentioned a couple of pretty basic and standard airway tools, the oropharyngeal airway or OPA and the nasopharyngeal airway NPA. And you even mentioned using that NPA in Peru on your mission trip to kind of help MacGyver the airway of that pediatric patient who needed the repair of his cleft palate. So we've seen massive innovation in airway technology over the last 20 years with all the video scopes, the video laryngoscopes, the flexible intubating scopes, but yet these OPAs and NPAs have pretty much been unchanged for years. Why do you think that is?
Well, part of it is because of companies that can sell a video laryngoscope versus an oral airway. There's a little more monetary reward in that.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. But I just think that people, even in anesthesia school, even in our anesthesia careers, we're focused on intubating, securing that airway. And the basic airway, well, that's just, you know, that's for, you know, basic airway management. That's for CPR. That's not for advanced airway management, which is true, but we're neglecting the bridge between opening the airway, masking, and intubating. And I think we need to get back to those basic fundamentals because we're seeing a growth in GI suites with anesthesia providing deep sedation and also with NORA environments, ambulatory surgery centers and clinics popping up. And we need a better airway tool just for basic airway management.
I love that. You know, you identified an issue. And a lot of times we may not even think about the tools that we have. And is there something better that we can use? And I wholeheartedly agree with you that basic airway management is one of the most important skills that we can learn and perfect as airway providers. And I'm fortunate enough in our anesthesia program to be able to teach a lot of airway management. And that is something that I tell the students that, you know, you'll learn to intubate and that's fine. And of course, you know, on the medical shows, it's all about intubation, but the most important thing you can do and you can learn and you can perfect is how to adequately mask ventilate a patient, because that's what's going to save a life. When you can't intubate, what do you go back to? You go back to ventilation. And that's what's important.
Yeah, because failure to maintain basic airway management is where the crisis starts, right? You have to open the airway. You can't ventilate. You can't oxygenate. And no one really died of lack of intubation. It's lack of ventilation and oxygenation.
That's exactly what it is. Yep, exactly. Okay, so you recognize that there were issues with some of our basic airway tools. Mm-hmm. And you know, in terms of our airways, what are these limitations with the OPAs and the MPAs?
Yes. So the OPAs are too short. They were designed in the early 1900s to pull the tongue forward. And that's exactly what they do. They pull the tongue forward. But as mentioned earlier, it's the deep sedation cases that where the obstruction is beyond the tongue. And sometimes the nasal airway doesn't open that tissue by the epiglottis either that collapses. And also with the nasal airway, it can cause a nosebleed 5% of the time. So, and OPAs, when I started, we left them in throughout the whole duration of the surgical case. And now we just keep them in as we need them. And then once the patient's intubated, we don't use the OPA for a bite block anymore. We use a soft gauze or something else. And it's because it can cause trauma to the palate and to the uvula. So that is those are the limitations, is and the hard oral airway is big and you can't adjust it. So I took a lot of those issues and simplified it for an easy and quick device to use.
I love it. Yeah. So the OPAs don't size correctly all the time. They're a lot of times too short or too long, causing obstruction. The NPAs, a huge risk of bleeding. So you took those limitations and take us back. Was there ever a first thought that there has to be a better way to do this? Or was it just more of using these over time and running into the same issues? What was the point where you thought, I've got a better idea here?
Yeah. Well, in my practice with doing deep max and my hands being extremely tired, after a long day of having Mac after Mac in my room. And then also my husband having surgery, and he was complaining more about his jaw hurting than his incision. It's like, okay, what's going on here?
So you're talking about doing jaw thrusts.
Yes.
Because the oral airway or the nasal airway isn't completely opening the airway.
Correct. Yes. And he has sleep apnea. And so it makes sense that they had to perform a jaw thrust to keep him breathing, his surgical procedure. And then also being frustrated with not having good control over positive pressure mask ventilation when a patient has a beard or a dentulous or obese. And it's like, oh, why are we leaking around the mask? Why can't we get a good seal? And now we have two people holding, or sometimes even three people trying to hold this mask down and squeezing the bag and trying to positive pressure mask ventilate. It's like, oh, you know, is there a way that we can do this and simplify it?
Okay. So it sounds like it was kind of doing the same thing over and over. And then your husband saying, you know, I had surgery and now my jaw hurts. I'd like to talk about the creation of the distal pharyngeal airway, also known as the McMurray airway. So this is your device. And yes. And am I saying that right? Do you prefer McMurray airway, distal pharyngeal airway, or McMurray distal pharyngeal airway?
I know there's a lot of names for one device, right? It's kind of like the LMA, right? A supraglottic airway So it's in the McMurray enhanced airway, MEA, also known as a McMurray airway for short, is in a new airway category called the distal pharyngeal airway category. So it's between an OPA and an LMA. So DPA, distal pharyngeal airway category, is a new category created for devices that are a little bit longer than the OPA, but they don't reach as far down as like an LMA or a supraglottic airway.
Okay. I love it. Now, take us through the creation of the McMurray Enhanced Airway.
Ooh, yes. So it started in 2016. And we had, at that time, we had a patent issued. So 2011 is when we started patent researching and got our patents. And then 2016 started McMurray Medical. And it's my husband, myself, and two other partners. And the other two partners, one has the manufacturing background, and the other one's a finance guy, and then our chemical engineer. So we started a company. And I tell you, you go all to school for so many years to prepare for anesthesia and being at the head of the bed, and launching a company is like learn on the fly. Talk to people, find a mentor, and putting it all together. But I was at the University of Minnesota at that time. And at the University of Minnesota, their slogan is driven to discover. So they have a whole area, a whole building dedicated to innovation. It's an innovation hub with having 3M there and Medtronic and Boston Sci and St. Jude and whatnot. And so I used some of their students to help create an initial prototype. And they were pretty rough initially, but after like the 12th rendition, we had something pretty close. And so then I could take that to our newly hired engineer and to come up with the 3D print. And how did we know it worked? My husband had surgery again, and one of my friends was the anesthesia provider. So she was a CRNA. And my husband said, are you going to ask her to use it? And I said, I'm not going to do that, but you can ask. You can ask. And
so your husband was the test subject.
Yes. Yes. And it worked. And it worked. Yeah. So it was great. And his jaw didn't hurt afterwards.
Perfect. Okay. All right. So now we have an N of one.
Yep.
I love it. And your husband was the test subject. His jaw didn't hurt after this one. Yeah. Where did it go from there?
Yes. So then finding a company to make it. So a manufacturer. That took 2 years. And thank goodness one of our partners had that background. So he circled the globe and found a great company to manufacture it in the United States that had a clean room that met our standards, because not all clean rooms are clean. And they did manufacture medical equipment. So that was great. So we had a good control of the quality and the regulatory control.
Okay.
So then we made it. And then you test it. And it took probably 6 months for testing and developing a label. And you have to do a shake and bake and make sure it doesn't fall apart under heat or when you insert it. The label took a lot of my time. And boy, I had no idea that that would take a lot of time. Finding the right box and packaging and labeling took some time and took some effort. But the end product, I love it.
Okay, perfect. And the color, how it's purple, right?
Yes.
I actually really like the color scheme. You can see it. You can find it real fast in the OR if you need it.
Yes.
How did you come up with the coloring?
Yeah, so there are a couple reasons behind the color purple. Like you said, you don't lose it in the sheets, so you can find it easily. The other thing is that from being from Minnesota, Prince, Purple Rain, that's our state color is purple.
Okay.
Some people say Vikings, but you know, Vikings, you know, they kind of disappoint us.
Okay. And well, when I do an Instagram post, I'm putting Purple Rain as the song in the background.
Oh, yay. Yay. And then also it's a color of renewal.
Okay. So there's a lot of symbology behind that color.
Yes,
I love it.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Now let's, I want to go back to this category that you mentioned earlier, because I don't think a lot of clinicians fully know that there is a category between an oropharyngeal airway and the LMA and the hypopharynx. And you're calling the distal pharyngeal airway space that kind of new category. Is the McMurray Enhanced Airway the first device to enter this category, or are there other devices?
As far as I'm aware of, we're the only device in this category so far.
And did you come up with that category, or is there some other agency that came up with that category?
Well, it was a collaboration with some people that came up with this, some airway experts.
Okay. All right.
Yes.
Fantastic. Yes. Okay. So now where exactly, let's talk more about the McMurray enhanced airway in this distal pharyngeal airway category. For listeners who've never seen the device before, how would you describe the McMurray enhanced airway?
Yes. So it looks like a nasal airway, but for oral use only. It has a flange so the patient can't inhale it or swallow it. It has an optional 15 millimeter connector that comes loosely connected in the package. But if you plan on using it, you just need to give it a quarter turn. And this connector can allow adapt connection to your anesthesia circuit or your BVM for positive pressure ventilation or providing oxygenation during intubation or also deep sedation. It has an elongated cushion bite block, and that allows it to be placed between the molars or even retromolar between the teeth and the cheek if you plan to intubate around it. But the cushion bite block allows multiple sizing within one. So you can fine tune the depth. You don't have to have the flange all the way to the corner of the lips. You can have it sticking out a little bit as long as there's teeth on that bite block. And then it has a flexible distal end to decrease palate trauma and also decrease gagging.
Okay, that makes sense. So this is an airway that goes in the mouth, and we already mentioned the color. It's purple. Mm-hmm. And so it sounds like that there are some mechanisms that you can fine-tune the positioning in terms of the device. Where does the tip end up? What's the goal? Where is the end of the, and you mentioned that it's a soft tip, so it reduces the palate trauma and pharyngeal trauma. But where does it end up?
Yes, it should be right by the epiglottis.
Okay, so it's back there.
It's back there, but that's where most of our obstruction mm-hmm. occurs in deep sedation cases, especially in endo when our patients are really sleepy for upper endoscopies.
Okay, that makes sense. It's going to open the airway if it's positioned correctly down there. Right, it seems it's like almost right at the border of the oropharyngeal airway and hypopharyngeal airway.
Yes.
Now, and I'm sure somebody's at this point thinking, is it going to cause the gag reflex or stimulate the gag reflex? How would you respond to that potential limitation?
Absolutely. Anything you put in your mouth that goes that back, back by your uvula is going to stimulate the gag reflex. So the patient has to be pretty sleepy initially. And I suggest providing a chin lift, pretty significant chin lift. If the patient responds to that, they'll probably respond to anything going into their mouth, like the McMurray airway. And we have to get our patients pretty deep when we put an OPA in, correct?
So exactly. So the
McMurray, you place it with the curve facing the hard palate and then slide between the molars. So you don't have to be tickling the uvula, which is probably less stimulating than the OPA, but in theory, you still need to have the patient pretty sleepy. The patient can wake up talking around it in recovery, if you like, and they can remove it themselves and then they get a discount.
Oh, everybody loves a discount. Okay, perfect. All right. So really it's if they can tolerate an OPA, then they can tolerate the McMurray enhanced airway. All right. We've kind of talked about GI patients, mm-hmm. but what, in addition to the GI patients, what are other clinical scenarios where this airway, your airway, would be very useful?
Yes. So patients with a beard or a edentulous or obstructive sleep apnea, when they're induced and you want to provide positive pressure ventilation, this is a great airway to reach for because you can connect it to your anesthesia circuit when you're intubating and place it retromolar and provide apneic oxygenation. So you have more time to intubate those potentially difficult to intubate patients. Also, deep MAC cases. If you feel like you're providing a chin lift or jaw thrust and you just want to have your hands free, use the McMurray. Or if you plan to go to a code, put it in your airway bag. So you can put the McMurray in, provide some oxygen, provide some intraoral ventilation or regular positive pressure mask ventilation. And as they set up your tools, and then slide it to the side and intubate around it. So those are the use cases. And then you can just keep it in through the whole procedure and use it as a bite block.
Yeah, I would love to see this device in every airway tackle box that you're taking to any code. It seems like it would be very beneficial in certain circumstances. And in fact, you were telling me about a clinical scenario where it saved the day. I'd love our listeners to hear this story.
Yes. A CRNA reached out to me for some mentoring, and he told me that he loved the McMurray Airway, and I asked him to share why he loved it. And he shared the story that he went to the emergency room to manage an airway that was in distress, and it was a patient that was 5 to 6 hours post-thyroidectomy. So the patient had a hematoma by the incision and pressing on the trachea, which was causing the respiratory distress. And they initially were doing a rapid sequence induction with intubation right away. However, they were unable to intubate the patient. So then they worked backwards on the difficult airway algorithm. They tried a supraglottic airway. That also failed. They tried mass ventilation with the OPA. That failed. And then it's like, okay, we need to do emergency cryc at this time because the oxygen saturations were dropping quite readily. And so they were opening up the incision, preparing to do a cryc. And they said, well, let's just put the McMurray in as we prepare here. And the McMurray, they were able to ventilate with the McMurray airway. And so they had a controlled situation now, and they drained the incision, and then they could intubate the patient successfully. And I tell you, that is amazing. That's amazing that saved this patient.
That is amazing. And I love hearing stories like that. I think that, number one, and you mentioned it earlier, one of the huge innovations of your device is the ability to connect an anesthesia circuit or an AMBU bag to your device and actually provide some either augment spontaneous ventilation or provide positive pressure ventilation with your device.
Yes, yes. And the EMS asked me to put that on the connector. So originally, we did not have that in the design. EMS said, if you put a connector on there, we can at least get some positive pressure ventilation for patients or people whose heads are planted next to the dash or steering wheel. And we can't intubate them. We can't positive pressure mass ventilate them. But if you put a connector on your device, at least we can open the airway and maybe pinch the nares closed, get some positive pressure into them. So EMS.
I love hearing that. My brother's a paramedic, and I'm going to have to send him one here, Airways, for that specific scenario, because we've talked about that in the past. And I thank you, EMS, for giving, you know, giving that feedback to you. And you know, we talked about situations where we would use the McMurray enhanced airway in anesthesia, but we haven't even talked about all the other implications that or scenarios where this could really be useful. And it seems like EMS, pre-hospital care, and certainly other areas in the hospital, the ICU, the ER, there are many potential applications for your device.
FAA.
I love it. Yeah. FAA. Are they going to start carrying it on planes?
Well, I talked to one of their instructors, and they said that they taught them how to positive pressure mass ventilate, and then had them come back a few days later, and only like 3 to 5% could properly mass ventilate after their clinical instruction. Mass ventilation is tough.
Yeah,
to
it
teach
is.
That there's so many variables.
Mm-hmm. It certainly is
to adequately lift that chest up. So intraoral ventilation with the McMurray can simplify that because you just close the nares in the mouth manually with your hand and you get the oxygen close to the vocal cords.
You know, maybe in the future, alongside the AED in
yes.
malls and buildings and airplanes or whatever, now they have an AMBU bag with a McMurray enhanced airway. Now let's talk about the difficult airway algorithm and currently mm-hmm. how the algorithms are structured. And, you know, a very simplified review of those, of pretty much any algorithm, is you have a problem with intubation or laryngoscopy and intubation, you would resort to ventilation, whether that is with a bagged valve mask or with a supraglottic airway device such as an LMA. Where do you see the McMurray Enhanced Airway, or MEA, fitting in to the algorithm?
I see it as way at the top, as opening the airway and being maybe a first grab. We say purple first in the airway algorithm. Because if you grab it first, it's multi-purpose. Plus, you have multiple sizes within one, so you can fine-tune the depth. And when you can just open the airway, establish oxygenation and ventilation, it gives you more time to think about, okay, what's our next step here?
Okay, so right when you're reaching to mask ventilate, grab the McMurray Enhanced Airway, put it in the airway, connect it to your circuit or AMBU bag, and ventilate away.
Yes, or you can use just a regular mask too if you choose to do that.
Okay, so yeah, okay, there you go. So have the airway in place and then have a mask over the top of that. At that point, it's essentially acting like we're used to using an OPA. It would Correct. Be acting in that similar situation.
But if you have failed mask ventilation and then mm-hmm. proceed to intraoral ventilation.
Okay. All right. So then if the mask ventilation doesn't work, disconnect from the mask, connect to your MEA. I love it. I love it. So simple. And that's what we need. We need simplified steps, because when we're in those situations, it's stressful. So if we already have thought through these steps and thought about them in our minds and they're simplified, it makes it a lot easier to respond to those emergencies, those emergency airways.
Yes. And Jeremy, the packaging is easy to rip open on the side. It's not a peel pack. You just rip it open and place it. No lubrication, no twisting, no tongue depressor, just curve facing the heart palate between the molars. Easy peasy.
And that's what we'll need. That's what I need. I need easy. And that's one of the reasons why we're doing this podcast, so we can bring awareness to the device. And we were talking about how to do that. And we're going to write it up in airway chapters. Currently, we're working on the next edition of Nurse Anesthesia, the 8th edition. I will make sure that this device is in the airway chapter. In addition, we are, SAS, Mark and I are running the Advanced Airway Academy at the annual Congress this year in Boston. And we will have a station there for advanced oxygenation. And I think your device will fit perfectly in either the video laryngoscopy in combination with that station / advanced oxygenation type stuff. I'm really looking forward to highlighting your device at that conference. And we do. We need to bring awareness. What kind of other things are you doing to bring awareness about this innovative device that you've created?
Yes. Well, the traditional is marketing. So social media marketing and then through advertising. But papers, writing papers, doing randomized control studies. I'm applying for grants. It's a lot of writing, but that helps bring awareness. Getting it out in the journals, into articles, talking to people at anesthesia conferences and meetings, speaking. I'll be at the California conference coming up here in May.
Oh, perfect. Love it. Okay. Love it. Yeah. So all those grassroots efforts, just getting in and spreading the awareness. And now you mentioned, papers, and I know that you've been published several times in the ANA journal and other journals. I also saw that you've received some awards for the McMurray Enhanced Airway. What are some of these awards?
So the Emergency Medical System granted us an award for innovation a while ago, ANA, the American Nurses Association, and that came with a wonderful stipend that was sponsored by Stryker, which helped fund some research. And then the initial one was at the WAM, so the World Airway Management Meeting in Amsterdam in 2019. We received an innovation award.
Oh, that's absolutely fantastic. Love hearing that.
Yeah, and in WAM, it was very nice to network with leaders that are around the globe, and I got to meet with Dr. Brain, Archie Brain, who created the first LMA, with his team and just have a conversation with them. It's like, I have this idea. What do you think? And then met with Dr. Paisy, who invented the video laryngoscope, and his team. And, just having mentors like that is very important to avoid some hurdles, but also to help navigate in territory, which is totally new to me with innovation.
How cool is that? So you've discussed your airway device with some of these icons of airway management who've developed the LMA, the video laryngoscope. I love hearing that. How awesome is that?
Yeah, very nice people.
All right. Well, let's wrap this up, Roxanne. This has been an absolutely fantastic conversation. What do you see is the future for the McMurray Enhanced Airway?
Making our jobs easier. Making our jobs easier. That is the future. We don't need to work harder than you have to. We need the right tool. And yes, we have end-tidal CO2. We have a pulse oximeter. We're vigilant. But I think the missing piece of the puzzle is that we need a better tool now to keep the patients breathing.
Well, thank goodness we have people like you who are pushing the envelope to create these better airway tools for us. Are there any final thoughts? If you were to leave our listeners, anesthesia providers, with one final message about airway management and the McMurray Enhanced Airway, what would that be?
If you don't ask, you won't have. So if you want to use the McMurray Airway, you need to ask your leaders at your facilities and to work through some of the challenges. But if you're a champion of the airway device and you want it, let's do it. Let's get it in your hands to make your job easier and to improve patient outcomes and also save time, especially in this fast-paced ambulatory surgery centers, neuro centers, and GI centers. We need to save time, and airway management can help do that if we have the right tools.
And that's the ultimate goal. Let's improve patient safety and maximize our effectiveness as airway providers, which ultimately will save time there. All right, Roxanne, where can people go to find out more about you and the McMurray Enhanced Airway?
Yes. So we have a website. It's called McMurrayMed.com. McMurray, McMurrayMed.com, McMurrayMed.com. And so we have all our clinical data, our videos, and ways to find me and reach out to me as well on our website.
Perfect. And we'll link that in the show notes so that our listeners can go and check it out. I've used it. I love it. And I am super, super excited and thankful that you have come on the show with me today to talk more about such an innovative airway device.
Oh, Jeremy, the pleasure is mine. Thank you for having me. And thank you for being an advocate for the McMurray Airway and for shooting some videos for me to use in our social media post. I'm grateful for that.
You're so welcome. That was a lot of fun. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you, Roxanne. This has been great.
Wonderful. Be well.
Thank you, everyone, for hanging out with me today during this episode with Roxanne McMurray and her innovative device, the McMurray Enhanced Airway, or McMurray Airway. I will make sure that her info at McMurrayMed.com is in the show notes so you can go check out her device. Now, I want to give a shout out for our Crisis Management Series, our TNA, the Nurse Anesthesia Crisis Management Series, and free crisis checklists. You can get them at thenurseanesthesia.com. You guys, CRNAs, RNs, you get CEs when you purchase the Crisis Management Series. It's awesome. Go check it out at thenurseanesthesia.com. And hey, if you are a nurse anesthesia resident or student in a program, we will give you a significant discount. Email us at info@thenurseanesthesia.com so we can send you that discount. And if you're not following us on Instagram, check us out on the gram at The Nurse Anesthesia. Finally, if you like what you're hearing, and we hope that you do because this content is all about anesthesia and it's for you, let us know the topics that you want to hear You can email us at info@thenurseanesthesia.com and consider sharing these episodes with a friend or a colleague. What helps even more is giving us a 5-star review on whatever platform you're listening on. Certainly at Apple, it helps a lot. It helps people find the show. Any positive comments help others find the show. Okay, DNA Nation, that's it for this episode. Remember, keep ventilating. And hey, if you get your hands on a McMurray enhanced airway, ventilate with that, and we'll catch you on the next episode. The Nurse Anesthesia Podcast is for educational and informational purposes only. It does not constitute medical or professional advice. We constantly strive for accuracy. However, the science of medicine changes, and clinical decisions should always be made based on current guidelines, institutional policies, and individual patient considerations. The views expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of any affiliated institutions. Listeners should always consult their own healthcare providers before making any medical decisions.